Our guest today, Justin Towns Earl, is the son of singer-songwriter Steve Earl. He was named after his father's mentor, the late Texas songwriting giant Towns Van Zandt. Justin's new album is called Midnight at the Movies. Coincidentally, Steve Earl has just released an album of Towns Van Zandt songs. Justin struggled early on in his career with drug addiction, the same as his dad. Justin's first album was very well received, and I commented upon the pressure of the sophomore album. You know, the sophomore album, people talk about the sophomore album, and people always talk about your first album. You've got all this time to write the songs, and in fact, a lot of the songs on your first album were when you, you know, in your teens and stuff.
Yeah, 10 and 12 years old, some of them.
And how about this one?
This one was, with the exception of two songs, was written, I started writing it the day after we left the studio on The Good Life, and just kind of slowly over the next 8 months. Like, I tend to get five or six songs going at once and just kind of work on them in little bits at a time, just kind of pass them by every once in a while. And so I started doing that, and we were just ready to make another record, I think.
Well, you know, there's kind of a musical sweet spot for you in like pre-war, heck, even ragtime and blues and that early stuff. But that's on here, certainly. But you also are writing other... I mean, the first track isn't very twangy at all, for instance.
No, it's not. I think that the way that I was brought up thinking that records should be made is that it's about the song and that the song should be represented. And I have to think of myself like first as a like I'm just a songwriter. I'm not a country writer. I'm not an old timey writer. I'm not a singer songwriter. I'd rather be like, as Bob Dylan said, a song and dance man, and be able to just do what I want. And I think that like I had to make The Good Life, and it was really twangy, but I think that we tried to leave just enough room to where it wasn't like, this is what you are,
right?
You know, so it did like kind of. Like, people did have to take a step back when they put on Midnight at the Movies for the first time, but I don't think it was too much of a change, you know, too scary of a transition.
Well, you hit the nail on the head with the songwriting is strong, so it doesn't really much matter what genre is it in, so I think that's absolutely, at least the way I view it. And now, we're talking about old-timey and older-sounding things. There is, you have a John Henry song, which isn't the John Henry song, but tell me about this one.
Well, I was looking back like through the history of that song, and there really is no the John Henry song. There's John Henry songs, and there's a billion of them.
Right.
He's been referenced in a million songs, and I think that, you know, I was raised in an extremely left-wing kind of radical union. Everybody in my family was a union member on my dad's side, and so it was like two images that were really strong and brought up, and you always heard, you know, the bedtime stories of were Joe Hill and John Henry. My grandfather passed away last year, and I was trying to find a way to write a song about him that wouldn't turn into one of those, you know, sappy Wings of an Angel kind of, you know, songs, because that's all been done before and it's pretty boring. And so I thought the best way to do that would just be like, you know, it's like, because he was like an image in my head that was as big, if not bigger, than both Joe Hill and John Henry. And so it was putting him up against two of what I consider to be if not mythical or not, two of the strongest images of men in my life.
Yeah. How old was he when he died?
73, I believe.
So I guess we'll hear that one. This is called They Killed John Henry.
Let me put my water down there. Let's see.
Well, when John Henry died, he laid looking at the sun. He said, Lord, take me now, my work is done. Lord, 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 take me now, my work is done. Yeah, but when they laid him out in that box of pine, boy, they laid that hammer by his side. Lord, Lord, laid that hammer by his side. Yeah, and Joe Hill, he worked any job he could find, boy. He'd rake your leaves or pick your vine. Lord, Lord, rake your leaves or pick your vine. Yeah, and they killed Joe Hill, put a bullet to his name, but that bullet made a martyr of the slain. Lord, Lord, bullet made a martyr of the slain. All right. Yeah, my granddaddy worked his whole damn life. Well, he never saved a nickel, though he tried. Lord, Lord, never saved a nickel, though he tried. And he died in Tennessee, but he couldn't find no rest. With that long road to Texas lie ahead. Lord, Lord, long road to Texas lie ahead. Yes, I ain't no great man, and Lord, I expect to lead a long life working in your dead. Lord, Lord, long life working in your dead. They killed John Henry, they killed John Henry, they killed John Henry, but they won't kill me, Lord. They killed John Henry, they killed John Henry, they killed John Henry, but they won't kill me.
They Killed John Henry is Justin Towns Earl and Corey Younts playing live for us today on the cafe. And Corey playing banjo and played actually a whole bunch on the album as well. You're kind of a band.
Yeah. This is what it consists of.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of maybe talk a little bit about what this album might represent to you, because I've heard you talk a little bit about it being the second album. And what happened to you after the first album? So you went out, you did a whole lot. I mean, I know you've always been playing live, but you did a whole lot of touring and a whole lot of publicity and all this stuff. And you were never shy about talking about things that had gone on in your life, your drug situation growing up. And a lot of people who are sons or daughters of famous musicians, they kind of, when they come in for an interview, they say, I don't really want to talk about that. And that's never been an issue for you. In fact, you write a song on here about it. What was it? Did you ever get tired of talking about Steve and your family and all that?
Well, I don't know where. I think you would have to resent your family pretty a lot in order for that to be an issue. And I mean, families, where I come from, family's family. Mm-hmm. It don't, and there's nothing else that matters. I was raised in a kind of family that even when I was strung out as bad as I could be, like, you know, hadn't bathed in 2 weeks and had been living on the street for a year, you know, I could come home to my grandmother's house and my grandmother would smack my face and say, sit down and eat, boy, I love you. Yeah. You know, and that's just the kind of household that I was raised in, that kind of family. It's like where, you know, we could say anything we wanted about each other, but you better watch out if you decided to, you know, say something sharp about an Earl around in the presence of another Earl, because you're going to get your head taken off, you know, really quick, you know. And so it's like we're a really tight family that's, you know, kind of, you know, drifted apart over the years, but nothing changes the way we love each other. And that's not going to, and you know, I'm always proud of my father. I mean, my father wouldn't have been there for me if he would have just been a musician and not a junkie. I have there's no two ways about that. This way of life takes you away from the people you love, you know, and that's just, it didn't have anything to do with the drugs or anything like that.
Yeah, no, if you ever think about that with your own life, about, you know, what if you want to have kids at some point, it's tough.
Well, you know, there is a way to do it. I've seen it done, you know, you know, and a good example of that is Kevin and Dustin Welch. You know, Kevin and Dustin have a really beautiful relationship. That's one of the best father and son relationships I've ever seen. And mm-hmm. Kevin is a hard touring musician.
Yeah,
you know, he tours a lot, and he's overseas more than he is in the U.S. You know, and you know, so there is a way to do it. I don't know if I'm that smart, and so I'm going to take my time. You know, and make sure that. Because I know I ain't ready right now, and I'm older than my dad was when he had me.
Well, you wrote this great song called Mama's Eyes, and tell me about your mother.
Well, my mom was, when my dad met my mom, she was a bartender at the Villager in West Nashville, and she was kind of, you know, this beautiful, over 6 foot tall, you know, woman that worked behind the bar where most of the musicians drank in town. And so every musician in town was kind of after her, and my dad ended up winning. And
that's where you get your height, obviously.
Yeah, too. Yeah, that's where the frame comes from. And she is, after my dad left, she, you know, worked. You know, she always wanted to make sure that I never grew up in the neighborhood that she grew up in. And so she was always, we bounced around from apartment to apartment, house to house, you know, as she could afford it to make sure. And she made sure that I never lived in a bad neighborhood or went to a real bad school anyway. Not until I was forced to go to a real bad school.
There you go. Well, can you do that one, Mama's Eyes?
I sure can, yeah. I am my father's son. I've never known when to shut up. And I ain't fooling no one no more. I am my father's son. We don't see eye to eye. And I'll be the first to admit I've never tried. Sure it hurts, but it should hurt sometimes. We don't see eye to eye, babe. I was a young man when I first found the pleasure in the feel of a sin. And I went down the same road as my old man, but I was younger then. Now it's 3 a.m. and I'm standing in the kitchen, holding my last cigarette, strike a match and I see my reflection in the mirror in the hall. And I say to myself, I've got my mama's eyes, a long thin frame and a smile. I still see wrong from right, 'cause I've got my mama's eyes. Yeah, I've got my mama's eyes.
Justin Towns Earl, and that is Mama's Eyes, which is on the new album, Midnight at the Movies. Was there an unveiling of that song for your parents?
I went over to my mom's right after I got a track on it, and a rough track of it after we recorded it in the studio, and I played it for her. My dad actually didn't hear it until after the record came out, but I gave him a chance to. I gave him several copies of the record, and he lost them.
Yeah.
And so I think I gave him two, and he lost them. And so the first time that he heard it, he came to see me open for John Doe at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, and he was standing kind of dead center in the balcony, and then I started playing it. And so that was the very first time he saw it, was in a crowd with everybody else.
Does he keep you honest as a songwriter? I would think he would not brook any kind of, you know, lyrics that didn't ring true.
Yeah, no, I mean, he used to give me a lot of, he used to push me a lot of my lyrics when I was younger. But he hasn't in a really long time. But it's been, I mean, we have kind of a, he, I mean, he's always, like, when he writes new songs, I'm the first person he calls.
Mm.
Well, now that Allison's with us, you know, it's like, I'm probably the second person that hears the songs, you know, and it's, And I do the same thing. I try to get him hip copies of everything. But, I mean, I did before. I've been kind of, you know, secretive and weird with my records here, you know, recently, just kind of holding them back until I was ready to to get rid of them.
Now, what kind of a writer are you? Are you kind of, is it work better for you to really concentrate on, particularly on lyrics, to sit down and really concentrate on it, or are you better maybe doing something else and things will come to you?
I'm better doing something else. I've always been a cocktail napkin writer. I tried to force myself to be a desktop writer for a long time when I was in my late teens and in my early 20s. I really attempted to be a desktop writer, but I was also attempting that, and I was also, you know, suffering from a severe drug problem at the same time. So the two didn't mix very well. I didn't sit still very well at that period in my life. But I also found after I got cleaned up that I don't sit still very well. And so I write on little notepads, like little scraps of things. I'm pretty good about being able to hold lyrics in my head. I usually don't have to write much down until it's actually laying it out. And I'm one that believes overwrite and edit before you underwrite, you know, and put it out there.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because it's better to have more to work with than less.
Now your dad's new album is of your namesake, Towns Van Zandt songs. Mm-hmm. What's your memories of Towns?
You know, very, very few. By the time, I grew up with my mother. My mother, like, you know, after my father left, you know, didn't want to do anything to do with anybody who played a guitar. And so, you know, like, I remember Towns from like a few gatherings and parties and stuff like that when I was really young. And you know, Towns was kind of a... He was kind of like the tell the kids a scary story and turn out the lights kind of guy, you know. But he was also a really good guy at points too, you know, as I remember. But you know, my memories of that are very few. Like I don't like by the time like when I was old enough to remember, I was living with my mother and there were no musicians around me. My mom was a stagehand. She drove a truck up for a lighting company and then worked as a stagehand at night at Starwood at the big amphitheater and then clubs around town. And so there were roadies hanging around my house, you know, constantly or all the time. And so, you know, my memories of all those people like are very few. I have more memories of Guy Clark because I got to know him after I was playing, you know, myself. But I didn't. Yeah, I didn't grow up around those songwriters at all. I actually tried to. Everybody I knew was like kids of a divorcee of a musician, and so there was.
They didn't. Yeah.
It's like it said. There's a whole host of girls in Nashville that won't date musicians because they hate their fathers, and that kind of goes both ways.
So did you ever roadie? Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked as a set carpenter for Crew One in Nashville for a long time, and. And did a lot of crew work over the years with my mom and my mom's boyfriend now. He's also he's a rigger and a stage manager. And so it's a lot of roadies.
Yeah. Yeah. Justin Towns Earl is our guest. And what's next, guys?
I think we'll do a number by the Carter family, I do believe. One that we actually learned from some boys in Portland, Oregon. Guys who call themselves the Foghorn Duo. You ready, boy?
Yeah. I'm leaving you. This lonesome song.
This lonesome song.
I'm leaving you.
I'm leaving you.
Ooh, this lonesome song.
This lonesome song.
I'm leaving you.
I'm leaving you.
This lonesome song.
This lonesome song.
I'll be gone, long gone, someday for long.
You see that train?
You see that
train
coming down that line. You see that train?
You see that train
coming down that line?
Coming down that line.
You see that train?
You see that train
coming down that line? When I'm gone, I know you'll be behind.
Justin Townes Earl and Corey Younts doing the Carter Family tune. And you do one cover on the album, which is Paul Westerberg replacement tune. How did that come about?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, part of the as part of, like, the only thing that I did to relieve the pressure of, like, I didn't really feel the pressure of the sophomore thing. Like, I didn't really think about it too much. I just decided that I was just going to make a record and just kind of to hell with it and just put it out there and let it go. And it was suggested that, you know, like, I noticed that, like, you know, like, Lucinda Williams covered an AC/DC song on her record. And a lot of people, like, I've noticed that through history where songwriters put a lot of a song on a record that's not theirs, that's just fun to play, and a song that they love. And I think that a big part of that is, as I may be completely off basis on this, but this is what it does for me, is since the beginning of my, like, since I started, since the first EP I put out, you know, my songwriting has been absolutely put underneath a magnifying glass and examined and picked apart, and people research my songs. I have a kid writing a thesis, his college paper, on one of my songs. It's a mythic song about a mythic place. Like, I moved a town from Pennsylvania into West Virginia and all this stuff. And so it was one song on the record that the worst thing that somebody could say about it was a bad cover of a Paul Westerberg song. You know, and you know, that wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. You know?
Well, let's play a little bit of it. This is You Can't Hardly Wait.
Lights they flash in the evening. Through a hole in the drapes. I'll be home when I'm sleeping. I can hardly wait.
You can't hardly wait. See, a not so bad cover of a Paul Westerberg song by Justin Townes Earl. You see, you're talking about people delving into what your songs are about. You're always going to get questions about why that cover. What did it mean to you?
Yeah,
you know, I guess you were a Replacements fan growing up.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was if you were a kid, if you were, like, growing up in the 1980s, if you were a young kid in the 1980s, when you started to realize what music was and what those sounds were that were coming out of the radio, you know, you heard a lot of Tom Petty. You heard a lot of bad, you know, hair band stuff. But you also heard, if you had parents that were, you know, even, like, just remotely hip, than you had Replacements records in your house. And, you know, and also that one song, Can't Hardly Wait, was like the trailer, like the credits to a billion TV shows and everything back in those days. And so it was one of those songs that just stuck with me. And I'm one of those people, a lot of people hate the version of it with the horns and the strings, and I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great, you know, and we even, like, on our track, like, people have told me, they're like, oh, we're so glad that the horn pumps aren't in there. But if they'd pay attention, they'd notice that the fiddle's doing the horn parts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right, I guess we got time for one more. What do you got in mind?
I think we're going to do a spiritual number. We recorded this, we're going to do Down in the Valley, which we just recorded for a documentary that's coming out called Coal Country. And we actually used Jason Isbell and the 400 unit as a kind of a choir on it, and it turned out it was kind of fun, so we'll see what we can do with it. You ready, boy?
Down in the valley, valley so low, yeah. Hang your head down, child, feel the wind blowing, baby, feel the wind blow. Feel the wind blowing, hang your head down, child. Feel the wind blow.
Come on, boy.
Roses love sunshine, violets love dew. Heaven up above knows that I love you, baby, baby. That I love you, that I love you. Heaven up above knows that I love you.
How you keep me good?
You buy me a castle up on a mountain so high. Yeah, just so that I can see him when he come walking by. When he walk by, when he walk by, so that I can see him. Oh, no, when he walk by.
Walk it on, boy, let's see him. Sonny boy.
Write me a letter, hey, and you send it by the mail. Yeah, you send it in the care of that old Birmingham jail, babe. Birmingham jail, Birmingham jail. Oh, you send it in the care of that old Birmingham jail. Yeah, you send it in the care of that old Birmingham jail.
And a great way to finish things up. Hey, Justin, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks to Corey Ounce as well. Justin Towns Earl, our guest here on the World Cafe.